The Ruck is back, and so is my voice after 8 weeks in Japan. But we've had a bit of a break since the end of the Rugby World Cup. Luckily, not too much has been going on in the world of rugby. Slotty, anything caught your eye in particular?
No, it's been quiet as anything, actually. I've been doing yoga since I've been back.
Interesting. And Jonesy,
You didn't mean that, did you? It's not interesting.
No, it's not interesting at all. Well, I've moved on. Jonesy,
any
big stories we've missed?
No. I'm sorry, mate. I'm still in Japan.
Are you?
I'm in Shinjuku. I'm in Shiodome. I'm in Shimbayashi. I'm still on the Ginza Strip. I'm still there.
As you can tell, I am Lawrence Dallaglio, and with me are the Times and Sunday Times dream team of Owen Slott and Stephen Jones. We have to, I guess, get stuck into the biggest story to hit our sport since the Bloodgate Harlequin scandal. Yes, it's time for Saracens. And Jonesy, you've had a fair bit to say about it.
Well, first of all, it's nowhere remotely compared to Bloodgate. Bloodgate was an absolutely shocking incident in which the careers of two senior medical people were at risk. One of them was terminated. That was absolutely deliberate, preconceived cheating. The judgment, should anyone really want to hear it, the judgment of the Saracens case categorically said there was no deliberate intent to infringe the salary cap. That is a direct quote, which really stuffs all those people who are wanting them to be disbanded, who want to sue them, etc. It's very unfair. Let me just boil it all down. Saracens' major offence was to be too good for a lot of other teams.
Very interesting. So you don't think that they have misled the auditor in any way whatsoever? No,
no, because that is what the Right Honourable, or whatever his name is, Judge Devlin, who's a former Master of the Rolls, says there was no deliberate attempt to infringe the salary cap. Now, if there's anything else in that judgment that contradicts the judge himself, well, they should put it out. But the secrecy of this is ridiculous. There are no offences which have come to light which justify any fine at all, leave alone the great train robbery fine, and leave alone the 35 points. If there is anything in there that justifies that fine, they should say it. Because at the moment, what I've learned from all my investigations is there was no deliberate attempt to infringe the salary cap.
Owen, would you like to... I mean, you obviously were also breaking the story at the same time in the Times, as Jonesy was in the Sunday Times.
No, sorry, the Sunday Times comes out on the Sunday. Slotty comes out on the Monday.
Okay.
So I just had a short head.
To be fair, I broke the story that they were going to get a 35-point deduction, and then you broke the story that they weren't going to appeal against it. So we're both newsbreakers. On that level, we're in the same place, but in terms of our interpretation of it... I think I'm not interpreting anything. You're on one limb, and I could not be further on the other one.
I am not interpreting anything. I'm telling you what was in the judgment.
No, Steve, this judgment is 103 pages long.
Well, see, that's where people don't realise.
Well, it's Lord Dyson for a start, and
Lord Dyson,
who was Master of the Rolls, who served as the judge on the Court of Appeal, the highest judge on the Court of Appeal,
and he makes vacuum cleaners
and. And sponsors Bath, but we'll get on to them in a minute.
Just hang on a second, but we could slow down this down, because this judgment's been kept so much under wraps that the chairman of the other 12 clubs are not being allowed to see it. They're not being sent an email of it.
No, I understand.
The only way they can see it is they can go into the PRL offices in Twickenham and they can read it there. They can't take notes and they can't take pictures of it.
Are you saying that line I read out is not in the judgment?
No, I'm saying that is, bizarrely, out of 103 pages, Saracens have quoted one line. Yeah. They haven't quoted any of the other lines, which has given them a 35-point deduction and a 5.3 million fine.
Exactly, what lines are they?
Well, the lines are this. The 35 points was the maximum penalty possible. And if the tribunal had not felt so strongly in their findings that the breach was not so severe, that they had discretion to reduce the points and award -3, -5, -10 or whatever, the fact that they gave the maximum penalty demonstrates how badly and how severe the breaches of whatever they agreed were.
Who says that?
I'm telling you now.
That's your opinion, which you're reading off your notebook.
That is a fact.
No, it's not a fact. No one has said that anywhere.
I promise you now, the fact that they're not letting the owners have a full copy of the findings And the fact that they're allowed to actually go into a lawyer's office and read a redacted statement tells you everything you need to know.
No,
and the fact that Saracens aren't appealing it also tells you everything you need to know.
No, it doesn't. You're wrong again. The exact facts are that Premier Rugby's regulations will not allow the judgment to be circulated or read. That is their regulation, and that is what the clubs agreed. Secondly...
Yeah, the clubs absolutely regret that now. I tell you, they all want to check...
Tough.
Yeah, but tough. So they agreed to something 5 years ago that they regret now. But Saracens they all want it out in the public because they want people to know exactly what happened.
Saracens have read the judgment. Of course, they know it, I presume, because they had to decide whether to...
And they're quoting one line from it.
Wait a minute. Let me finish.
The first time they quoted that line...
Saracens have read the judgment, and they announced last week they would like it to be shared. Secondly, Lol, you're completely wrong again. The reason why Saracens have binned off their appeal is nothing whatsoever to do with the contents of the judgment at all. They were told it would be impossible for the review to be heard before March... by which time they'd have no idea whether to play their top players or not.
Saracens said last week they'd like the judgment to be shared. If there's a rule that doesn't allow it to be shared, there's absolutely nothing to stop Saracens sharing with the public how these co-investments and their business works.
No, that is
anyone can do that. You can do that. If they want to build trust, then they can say, listen, this is why we've been hard done by, because this is how we operate. But they're not going to do that, are they? If they want it to be shared, then they can go to PRL and say, we want it to be shared. The other 12 clubs will go for it and it will happen.
No, Saracens won't.
They're just saying that, Steve.
No, they won't.
You're very stubborn with your view on this, aren't you?
Lol, this is a research job. No. When you put something in the paper...
Listen, we've researched it as well.
Steve, I swear to you, I've spoken to people inside this, and I think when the thing comes out, you are...
I mean, obviously, as a director of WAS, I wouldn't have any insight into any of the information.
You've all spoken about insiders. I've named it. If I've got to get something past the News International legal team, I've got to have two separate sources, neither of which have anything to do with one another,
I'll tell you what, perhaps I'll go down to PRL's office, and as a director of WAS, maybe I can read the statement, and maybe we can come back and have this conversation in a few weeks.
You should have done that ages ago. Yeah. You should have done it before.
I don't need to, because I know exactly what's happening here.
I know exactly what's happening.
They signed our best player, Elliot Daly. You don't need to tell me what's happening.
No, but you're telling me what he's earning at Saracens. You have no idea what he's earning at Saracens.
Of course he knows what he's earning at Saracens.
No, he doesn't.
Because he negotiated with him. He said to Elliot, can you stay at WAS because we'll pay you this? No. And Elliot goes, no, I'm going there because I'm getting this plus Elliot, 100 grand. Of course you know how much you've been played.
Do not go around telling other people what they're on.
Well, you tell people who you're negotiating with.
Well, he hasn't gone for a pay cut.
Okay, well, I'll tell you what.
Lawrence, is he earning more now than he used to be?
Yes.
Yeah.
If you've researched it, say on air what he's earning.
No, because that's confidentially between yourself and the player.
Okay, you said you knew. Tell us how much he's earning. Say it on air.
It's not fair to say.
We're not at liberty to say how much people are earning. But it's safe to say he's earning more at Saracens now than he was earning at WAS last season. And let's just close it there. Nigel Ray has come out and said, we have made mistakes. And so, with humility, we must accept these penalties. As a club, we will now pull together and meet the challenges that lie ahead. We confirm our commitment to the salary cap and the underlying principle of a level playing field, and we will continue to work transparently with Premiership Rugby in this regard. And that's quite an interesting word, transparently, because what they haven't done is they haven't declared the financial structures of any of those players, which were the rules under the salary cap. What you're supposed to do is show the auditor each individual financial arrangement for each player. Now, they knew that the auditor was no way going to pass that when he said, there's the financial arrangements for Billy Vunipola, there's the financial arrangements for Owen Farrell. They didn't declare any of those, and now they've admitted to making that mistake.
Yeah.
They did declare some of them. They did declare some of them. No question.
Maybe some of them up to the salary cap. They did not continue.
The mistake they made was...
They did make a mistake. Now you're admitting they made a mistake.
No, Nigel Ray just admitted it.
Now you're admitting they've made a mistake. So they were in breach of the salary cap.
It is no more than an accounting error.
On an industrial scale.
Yeah.
Can I just read out...
Listen, you're talking to an independent journalist now. You are a director of WASPs.
All right. I'm an independent journalist.
A player. I haven't lost a player.
No, we lost a few players.
You lost a few players. I'm not a director of anything.
But I don't begrudge the fact that Elliot Daly's moved, so just so we're clear. And I don't begrudge the fact he's moved to Saracens. You know, I've got no issue with that. Billy Vunipola moved. I don't have an issue with that. He was a Wasp player, came through the Wasp Academy. He moved to Saracens. You know, if play, you know, I understand there's a freedom of movement. All we're trying to contest here is that there has been a breach of the salary cap.
I just wondered to what extent we can really believe that you go 600 grand over cap and have done it sort of without being deliberate.
Who's 600 grand over cap?
Well, to get a 35-point deduction, you've got to be over 600 grand over.
No, because that's what the rules say. No, and there's two elements of it. First of all, you're paid, as you say, pro rata for going over. But secondly, there is the actual offence of doing it and not declaring it. So it is not totally based on how much they went over.
Well, the rules say that there's a sliding scale, and once you're 600 grand over, you get your 35 points, which is the maximum.
Yeah, but
so they're at least 600 grand over. They could be 6 million over.
No, they're not. They're not.
Well, you don't know how much over they are.
No, if you reread the rules, you'll find out there's an element for the actual offence itself.
The fact that they came with the maximum penalty, and the fact that, I mean, I know this PR machine that's going on is a bit of a smokescreen. The fact that Saracens have decided not to appeal the review suggests that there was not just a small going over whatever they were allowed to spend, it was quite a considerable amount that they were over, because you do not, as Lord Dyson, dish out the maximum penalty available, 35 points, and a pretty substantial fine of 5.3 million for just going over the salary cap a small bit.
Okay, maybe that's
apparently
another,
you do.
Maybe there's another way of looking at this.
Tosh.
Maybe there's another way of looking at this. So look at Saracen's squad and ask yourself, why have they got twice as many internationals as any other team in the league? Look at how many players does Saracens have at the World Cup? 16. Exeter, who they beat in the final, last two finals, had 6. So how can you have that quality of player if Exeter are up to cap, if all the other clubs are up to cap? How can Saracens have so many more international players? It just doesn't add up.
Well, no, unless
all these international players are saying, pay me like an average club player, don't pay me what I'm worth.
And the argument is that, and Saracens quite rightly point to the fact that they've got a very good academy, and a number of those players have come through that academy. But the thing is, once you become quite successful and you play for England and you play for the British Lions, you also attract the attention of other clubs, and you become subject to a number of offers to leave your own club.
And your value rises.
And your value rises. And there you have to, you know, the your current employer have to meet that market value.
Listen, boys. Are you saying that these guys are all at Saracens because of the salary?
Mm-hmm.
Nothing to do with nothing to do with all their systems, nothing to do with the culture, nothing to do with their togetherness, nothing to do with Mark McCall, Brendan Venter, the old...
No, I'm not saying that at all, but I am saying that they are being paid what they're worth. And I don't... Are you saying that they're all earning half of what they're worth because they like the culture?
Absolutely.
You can't mean that, Steve.
If you want to take that argument on, so let's say they refuse to pay Itoje anymore, so he's going to go to Worcester, is he? Look, on Saturday, a fly half of Saracens was the latest Vunipola, okay?
Yeah.
It wasn't Max Malins who was next in line. It wasn't Alex Lazowski who was an international player. It wasn't Owen Farrell wasn't there. So that was their fourth choice fly half. Their system is absolutely bloody brilliant. They are the archetypal modern-day club, because these days players don't come in through the window and the door like they used to at Leicester, etc. Local lads. Mark McCall is one of the best coaches, if not the best, in the game, and their systems are bloody brilliant.
Steve, I don't disagree with any of that. I completely agree they got the best academy in the country. I have so much respect for what the academy has done and what it achieves and what it's produced. They produce more than anyone else, but I think that is irrelevant to this salary cap conversation.
So these guys are only there because Saracens
have
paid them more.
That's not what he said. He said that they are there because of the coaching structure, which they've invested in enormously, and they've got some wonderful coaches, because of the academy, which they've invested in enormously, and they've got probably the best academy, certainly of all the Premiership clubs, probably, you know, on a par with the likes of Leinster. So there's lots of reasons why they're there, but ultimately they've not signed a contract to earn less money there than they have anywhere else. I stayed at Wasp for the same reasons, because I believed in the culture, I believed in the chance to win trophies, I liked the coaches I was coaching with, and I thought that we would attract some of the best players in the country. But I was only subject to an offer, maybe two or three offers, that might have been a 5 or 10% increase in the current salary that I was earning. Now, it's not worth leaving that culture, that competition for places, etc. But these guys have been subject to salary offers considerably higher than they were earning at the time. So none of them have signed with Saracens and with Nigel Ray and these co-investments for less than their market value.
And you've got to put, you've got to filter that all into the state of the current game where players can lose their livelihoods, their livings, just in one tackle. We all know how vulnerable a player's career is. So they all understand the necessity to earn while they can. They're not saying, I've got 15 years here, I'll just take a little bit less. They're going, I want to maximise what I'm worth. That, I mean, we know that is the case. That is not that is not just the whim. They want to maximise.
And also, there's another string to this argument, which is, you know, sort of backs what Saracens are doing. You know, would England have the team that they have currently, the squad, if Nigel Ray and the Saracens board had not kept that core of English players together? The answer is probably not. Would Saracens have won 3 out of the last 4 European Cups if they'd not kept that squad together? The answer is no, they wouldn't. So, you know, there's a flip side to what's happening at Saracens, in that English rugby takes big, big strides forward. And, you know, we can proudly, and we have proudly over the last 3 or 4 years, talked about Saracens glowingly in terms of their performances in the Heineken Champions Cup.
When you say that, you know, people, you break your leg and that's the only, that, you know, then you've lost your whole career. If I was in that situation, if I was worried about breaking my leg and losing my career, Saracens would be where I'd go to. Because if you leave aside the salary cap, I think I listed 7 companies in which Nigel Ray or colleagues have invested in retired players. So that's where I'd go, and that's where I'd stay. Also, if I was a Saracen, first of all, when you get that coaching team, they bring you from nothing. Mario Tozzi's salary went from, as we all know, 20 grand to 200,000 in 1 year because he went out of the academy. But if they're developing that sort of player, suddenly they get other incomes. You get your international rugby income. You get your income for playing for the Lions. You get your side deals. You get your advertising deals. You get your appearance deals. So if you go to Saracens, in the end, your Saracen salary is not going to be a massive figure in it anyway. It's not going to be more than 20, 30% of your salary. If someone gives you an extra couple of quid, so what?
Well,
you want to stay where you are.
I don't disagree with that, but I still don't believe that the Saracens players are taking pay cuts. You say they're prepared to take half of what they're worth to stay there.
So who's saying they're taking half of what they're worth?
Well, you just said that earlier. You've got all those other clubs out there who are trying to win the Premiership every year. You've got all these other players out there who are trying to enhance their own reputations, their own careers, their own earning ability. You've got all these other coaches out there who are trying to win something. And it hasn't been a level playing field. So does the punishment fit the crime? I don't think I'm really the person to say that. But I just look at the rest of the Premiership and I just feel that they've been conned. I think it's been an unfair competition. We've been talking about this sort of off the record for too many years now. And now it's out there. I feel sorry for the fans who are supporting the teams that haven't had a fair chance to win. I feel really sorry for the other players from the other teams who haven't had a chance to win. But what if those players had won all these titles and had boosted their earning ability and got sponsorships and maybe got into the England team as well? I mean, I just think the tentacles of what's happened just stretch so far that we have to take this seriously. I think the comparisons to Bloodgate are invidious, but I just think this is a big scandal, and I think 35 points is reasonable, okay. if not
I think you bought into what you think has happened and what hasn't happened. There is no one that's ever played against Exeter who wouldn't be there if Nigel Ray had come in 3 million below the salary cap. Every one of those players would have been out there. Exeter lost on the field of play. No one was there because they were being paid more. And I tell you what a good... finally on this, I'll tell you what a really good indication would be. Clearly, Saracens have got to be whiter than whiter and white next year. OK, so at the end of the year, they've got to be whiter and white. Let's see how many people leave Saracens. None.
Do you think that those legal eagles, and as well paid as they are, probably said to Saracens, I would suggest it's probably better in the interest of the competition and yourselves moving forward that you don't review the decision?
Because no.
If you review it, and I know that you're suggesting that was so that they can focus on rugby and there wouldn't be a hearing until January, etc. And it would be a sort of a bit of a cloud over the rugby season. But there's a lot of people, not necessarily myself, but there's a lot of people in rugby that probably take the view that they didn't review it, because if you do, then everything, more stuff would become more public, and that's probably a good reason why they shouldn't review it, and they should just try and draw a line under it right now. And the other question I would ask is that clearly there's something's gone wrong. You're suggesting that they've done nothing wrong.
No, hang on. Yeah. I said they breached the salary cap.
Okay, so but when you have things like integrity and honesty and humility written up on your stand as the values of your club, that starts to you start to question that, don't you, really? Because clearly something's gone wrong here. Go back to you before. Anything that warrants a maximum sanction and a pretty hefty fine suggests to all of us who apparently know exactly what's in the report, but we don't, that there's something amiss, you know, a foot has taken place, and you know, everyone's trying to draw a very cosy line underneath it, and I suspect what will happen now is that PRL, with the backing of Saracens and all the other owners, will sit round the table and say, okay, what's gone is gone. You know, there is a slight asterisk next to those stars that you, you know, next to those European stars that you won, and there's an asterisk next to the league titles that you won, because you've won them by breaching the salary cap. But you've still won them. They're not going to be taken away from you. And moving forward, we need to agree as a group of Premiership clubs, you know, what the salary cap really means, co-investment or fixed salary, and how we move forward out of this rather sorry saga.
There won't be any asterisk in the Sunday Times. I can't speak for the Times, even though we're now amalgamated. finally, with the
different versions in different papers.
With the £5 million fine, it is obvious that the greedy swines out there are now trying to divvy that up so they all get £500,000 each. That is completely wrong. They should give the £5 million from Saracens to the Saracens Foundation, to the Saracens High School.
I'm assuming that the reason they're... Sorry, just so our listeners are aware, the reason they're divvying up the fine is because under the rules of Premiership Rugby, which were signed up to by all of the clubs, that's what they agreed to.
No, it's not.
Is it not?
There is no law in the regulations confirmed by Paul Morgan on the record in the Sunday Times. They do not know what they do with the £5 million. There's no law, there's no regulation to cover it.
To Jonesy's point, in fairness, in Europe, across Ireland, France, this is not even a story, because there is no salary cap in European
rugby. That's absolutely right.
And therefore,
that's absolutely right,
you know, Saracen's participation in that competition is not questioned. And in actual fact, having suffered a big defeat in the opening round against Racing, they put that to bed with an emphatic victory against Ospreys. And I genuinely believe, as Mark McCall reiterated a couple of days ago, you know, if they find themselves, you know, at the top of the pool come the quarterfinal stage, they will have a very, very good chance of qualifying. So we've had two rounds of the Champions Cup, the Heineken European Champions Cup, as we describe it. Who have you been impressed with in those opening two rounds? Slotty, I'll open up by saying that obviously from an English club point of view, given that how far all the England players went in the World Cup and the balance that those directors of rugby have to strike between the Gallagher Premiership and the European Cup, I feel like they've made a bit of a slow start, haven't they, to be honest with you? And it's only Exeter and Northampton that have come out the traps and look anything like they're capable of winning the competition.
I think that's not hugely different to the pattern of previous seasons. I mean, previous seasons, Saracens has really been the only team that's contended from England, and Exeter have been disappointing. So this season, it would appear that Exeter have gone up a level in Europe, only after two rounds, but they've looked pretty impressive. So who I've been impressed with, Northampton seem to have gone up a level. Their win in the first round, was that against Leon at home,
yeah,
wasn't it? Yeah. I thought that was a bit of a statement. You know, we're at the party this time, because too many times you see English clubs, they qualify for Europe, and then it's like, God, do we actually want to be here? Because they haven't got the resources to fight a European campaign. I mean, Worcester a bit like that last season, weren't they? So I think Northampton have taken a step forward, which is really encouraging. Exeter, I think, could go. You know, they should be in the knockout stages, and then who knows what's there.
Well, 10 points from their opening two games, I think Exeter certainly looked the pick of the English clubs. Gloucester already having lost both games, albeit narrowly, first at Toulouse and then yesterday in Montpellier, looked like they might concentrate on domestic honours. Jonesy, for you, I mean, clearly Leinster are the pick of the Irish provinces again, although some really strong performances from Ulster and Connaught. And who's impressed you from over the channel in France?
La Rochelle were about to impress me till they self-immolated yesterday.
Yep.
Toulouse, I think the slow playing. I always like it when Toulouse are winning games and not playing very well at the start of the season. Well, I think they're going to come through. But can I just make one other point? I don't want to be controversial, you know, like in the last bit, but the English players, not all of them are back yet. Saracen's still got a few to come back, so have other clubs. Mm. They've been away from since May. These players, in 6 weeks' time, they all go away again. Really, it is so difficult for England, and that is why anyone who's won the Cup from England has done such a magnificent job. France are in a little bit in the same position. So Irish teams really should be favourites for this, Leinster and Munster. Mm. It is such a bloody nightmare. And when you come down to it, England players are with their clubs less and less and less.
No, I 100% agree with that. I was just making the point that because Ireland's players exited the World Cup early, they would have come back very disappointed, but also very hungry with a point to prove. And, you know, I believe that those players from Leinster in particular and from Munster will go into that Heineken Champions Cup and go, do you know what? We'll show you that what happened in Japan was just a blip.
That's very true.
And you know, as a player myself who was lucky enough to win the World Cup in 2003, I came back from that tournament in Australia, slightly over-refreshed, it must be said. But Warren Gatland said to me, listen, you can have a week off and then you're playing in the Heineken Champions Cup the following week against Perpignan. And we were lucky enough to go on and win the Heineken Champions Cup that season. Now, of course, he gave me rest later on in the season because he knew that I probably needed it. But I couldn't wait to get back to playing for my club.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
This has gone on and on and on. The clubs see their players less and less and less. You're a director of Wasps. All these clubs are trying to make their way. Would you challenge Regulation 9 in the court?
Well, what I would say is that the club's owners and the RFU signed up to an agreement, which, let's not forget, the RFU provide each of those clubs with a lot of central funding for all of the England players, English qualified and EPS squad players that they provide. Now, on the back of that, there has to be a bit of a trade-off. And the trade-off is that those players will only play a certain number of games for their club in one calendar year, including the World Cup warm-up matches, including the World Cup itself. So it is a fine juggling act for the coaches from Saracens and all the clubs as to when and which games they introduce those England players back to. But we mustn't forget that for each England player that they produce, they receive quite a hefty amount of money from the RFU. So that agreement gets revisited on a regular basis. Whether it's the right one moving forward, who knows? But, you know, I go back to the point that only two or three of the Premiership clubs out of 12 make any money whatsoever. The rest of them are substantially in debt, including my own club, Wasps, and are only in trading because of the goodness of some pretty hefty financial backing from individuals. And
you earn so much, Lawrence, you must be able to help now, can't you?
We're talking about breaching the salary cap again.
That's not very nice, isn't he? He signed three deals this morning.
Exactly.
I do think the psychology of when you reintroduce your players is interesting.
Yeah.
Because as you say, the Irish and Scots have come back really, really disappointed and they just want to get at it. You're a comeback a World Cup winner and you're feeling on top of the world, so you're feeling pretty happy with life. I think the English players who have got all the way and just fallen at the final hurdle, I think they're probably the most sort of scarred by it. And you can see, you know, Saracens have Vincent Cock playing at the weekend, or he played he played at Racing a week and a bit ago. But he was the first one to come back.
But I would take the view that these guys, as Jonesy's point, they've been in training camp since God knows when, May last year, you know, May this year. They are in the shape of their life.
Yeah, they want to get
out
there as well.
In the physical shape of their life. So in my you can't, unless you're injured or you've got some sort of serious mental health problem, you know, you need to get yourself out on your rugby field for your club because you're the fittest you've ever been in your career. Now, you know, we saw that from the performance of Elliot Daly yesterday for Saracens, made a wonderful debut and showed us, you know, the sort of form that the reason why Saracens, you know, have paid whatever they've paid for him. OK, let's move on. Slotter, you were at Sale yesterday where there was a try disallowed after the conversion. Now, I've sought a bit of counsel on this, and I think we've all been led to believe that once the conversion's been taken, the points stand. But actually, that's not the case at all. I think that's just something that we created on television as a way of suggesting that. My understanding is that the TMO can intervene even after the conversion's been taken. To disallow the try. What was Steve Diamond's take on it? That would have been quite interesting yesterday.
He was just happy to get away with a win, to be honest with you, because he knew that his team had not really turned it on, and he didn't whinge about that at all. In fact, all he was talking about was how he wants to get Leone Nakarawa into his team.
Wow.
And under the cap. But that's an injury dispensation thing. Sorry, Steve.
That would be some signing, Nakarawa, wouldn't it? I mean,
just heaven, that guy, isn't he?
He's an unbelievable player. So he's obviously the player that didn't return back to Racing 92 because he was building his family a house. That was the reason he gave to his director.
Yeah, he didn't come back to work when expected. I was told that he had his disciplinary on Friday, but Sale seemed confident enough to say that they can get him on their injury dispensation. I mean, the Sale have got Josh Beaumont and Lou Diaga, the South African World Cup winner. Those are their two first choice locks, and they're both injured, so they can do that. But I just love the balls of that to say we're going to go and get Nakarawa.
Well, Steve Diamond's never afraid to speak his mind, and obviously got away with a win yesterday, and it kind of keeps them in contention.
But can we just go back onto that try?
Yeah.
Because anyone listening, not sure what we're talking about. Sale did score the most wonderful try from on their own. Simon Hammersley threw a long and ludicrously audacious pass which was nearly intercepted and shot him in the foot, but threw this long pass to Danny Solomona, and then they swept down the length of the field, and it was absolutely gorgeous. There was a clear forward pass in the middle of that, but as you're saying, try was scored, conversion was taken, and everyone was thinking, oh, well, that's that then, isn't it? But then the TMO is reviewing it. And yeah, there's a lot of misinformation about if once the conversion's been done, then you can't review.
I can't name the man on this occasion. He is a very, very senior figure. I rang him immediately. I saw that on TV. I said, surely they cannot go back to the TMO once the conversion is taken. He said the ref was wrong under the current protocol.
Right.
He was wrong. You cannot go back. But he does say, however, we all agree if it is a nonsense, we would bend the protocol to get the right.
Yeah, so what he's saying is that, you know, it wasn't a borderline decision. It was looked like it had been thrown a metre or metre and a half forward.
Yeah,
so therefore, that's probably why Steve Diamond did not, you know, contest it given the outcome of the game. But so Sailor up and running. Just going back to the chat about Racing Metro, who have also opened their account with a win at home to Saracens and then a draw over in Munster. Stuart Barnes, our colleague, argues that Finn Russell, the Racing fly half and Scotland fly half, should be the Lions fly half if he carries on playing the way he did against Munster for Racing. I think he's talking about a moment of skill where he nutmegged Scannell, which probably will haunt Scannell for a few more seasons to come. But Finn Russell, let's just talk about him particularly. You know, is he the guy that could, you know, light up Racing's Heineken Cup campaign this year?
Well, probably, but I might sound like Mr. Scrooge here, but when you look at that nutmeg, wasn't that the luckiest thing that ever happened in the history of lucky rugby? I mean, Scannell's running across and Finn Russell puts a little grubber in it. It happens to go through his legs. It's not like when you nutmeg a footballer, he's sort of standing there stationary trying to defend. Then you sort of know what you're doing. But Russell's running, Scannell's running, he kicks an oval ball which can bounce in any way, and it happens to go through his legs. I think it was very fortuitous.
I mean, it wasn't just that. He's clearly a player who plays with an incredible amount of vision, because he spotted O'Mahony and Lockwood. Lockwood injured, and he went straight through the gap there and fed him off for his try. So he has vision that I don't believe every fly half in the Northern Hemisphere.
Completely agree. I love watching him. He did a couple of brilliant things in the Racing Saracens game that I was at the weekend before. He's a complete joy to watch. I just looked at that little grubber, the nutmeg grubber as it's known, a few times. I go, I don't know if he knew what he was doing there. Jonesy, am I miserable?
I find myself agreeing with you. But look, the thing is with that, the game is so machine-like these days.
Yeah.
That used to happen hundreds of times.
Yeah.
I mean, my all-time hero, Davey Watkins, do that three times a match. It's just one of those things. Good on him for doing it, but it just reminds you of what we lost from rugby. Because that was great. It did go through his legs.
Lawrence, did you do that sort of stuff?
No. And if anyone did that to me, then that would be highly embarrassed as well, really. In fact, they did, actually, a couple of times. James Simpson Daniel ran round me three times before he scored. He came back to run round me for the third time and actually turned me in circles. So we've all been embarrassed on the field of play, that's for sure. Now, just talking about some of the other contenders, Ulster have made a pretty bright start, you know, won away at Bath and produced a performance against Clermont. Do we think they are genuine contenders? And just looking at the rest of the sides, Leinster, Northampton, Exeter and Toulouse all have two wins from two. Is it too early for us to say that the winner of the Heineken Champions Cup this season might come from that group? Or are we reading too much into that?
I think we are, Lawrence, because what a terrible result for Bath. If Bath are going to have any pretensions this year, you've got to beat Ulster at home. Yeah. Ulster have always been really difficult to beat at Ravenhill, or so wherever they call the ground now. But you've got to, if you're Bath, you've got to already be in crisis mode, because that was awful. Ulster are not that great a side, I'm sorry.
I think Bath, I don't know, when you're two defeats down from two, are you not almost writing it off then?
I think Wasps and in the past Bath have actually both qualified, having lost their opening two Champions Cup games. But you do think, looking at the quality of some of the other teams in the groups, that's going to, you know, that's not going to be the case this time around.
They've got to get past Clermont as well, haven't they? They've got two games against Clermont to come.
I agree with you, Jonesy. I don't think Saracens are out of the mix, out of the equation yet. I think, a couple of wins for them and suddenly they're right back in it. I'm still not convinced about Clermont. I think they have weaknesses in their side. I think Leinster look exceptionally strong. Exeter, the best chance from England's point of view. I think Northampton will find out a lot about themselves when they go to Dublin in round four, and Toulouse look to be the best threat from France, because they're winning ugly, which is very unlike Toulouse. So hopefully it'll be a fantastic Champions Cup.
Maybe because so many World Cup players have been away, but the first two rounds seem to have been a bit ho-hum, and I kind of feel that we need... I'm looking forward to rounds three and four, to some really big clashes. I just don't know if it's quite got going yet this season.
Well, I'm with Jonesy. I mean, we're all still in Japan, and probably most rugby fans are still sort of remembering the wonderful matches we saw in Japan. And when you come back, you know, it's very hard for any of those games to be anything near that sort of quality, really. And it's difficult for the coaches to integrate those players back into, you know, their systems and their setup. So maybe rounds three and four will bring something better.
Look, I'm sorry, I keep on making one last point, but the other thing is, the Heineken Cup's really got to fight its corner now. CVC are taking over, or they're investing in the Guinness Pro 14 and the Gallagher Premiership. The top 14 is crazy competition, but it's going massively in France. European rugby's really got to be careful, and it's got to fight its own corner, because it is going to be swamped unless they look out.
Some other stories that came out across the week. England's women beat Italy 60 points to 3. I don't think we were surprised by that, to end their autumn campaign with a third straight win. So the English Roses are going at great guns. And Japan women copied the men by inflicting a defeat on Scotland. They're sick of the sight of Scotland. 24 points to 20. So
you've got to see the funny side of that, haven't you?
Well, unless you're Scottish, of course. And I guess one more controversial story. Bath's claim, and this is not going to help their relationship with the RFU, England's have misled them over the extent of the injury to Joe Thokunasinghe's knee at the World Cup. Mm. It was a strange one. We didn't see enough of Thokunasinghe. We didn't see enough of Jack Noel, really, did we? He played brilliantly, by the way, for Exeter across the weekend. But any light you might want to shed on any of that?
Well, there was a suspicion that Joe Thokunasinghe wasn't fit or fit enough almost the entire way through the World Cup. He went out there having picked up a slight injury. He got fit enough to play in that USA game where he scored two tries. Looked okay, didn't look brilliant, and then we didn't see him again. We were always told he was available for selection, but now what you're hearing, I can't believe he was, and Bath believe that he should be sent home earlier and sort of got on with the process of rehab or surgery or whatever's required. So I think it's a bit of a shame, because we looked at Joe before that World Cup as a potential game breaker for England. You know, someone who might have turned a big game. He never got the chance, and And in my end of season, end of World Cup assessment, I was a bit hard on him. I said he was one of the real disappointments of the England World Cup. But if he just wasn't fit, then he just shouldn't have been there.
What about England winning the Grand Slam this year? Get the crowd behind them, get the nation behind them, get the sponsors back, play attractive rugby. Then suddenly you win a Grand Slam, you're in business. Who cares about...
Well, I mean, listen, what I would say, once you've produced the performances that they produced in the quarterfinal of the World Cup and then the semi-final of the World Cup, and let's just put the final to one side, there was a lot of reasons why England lost that game, but they've set the benchmark so high now that you know all England fans can justifiably, I believe, say that we go into this tournament, particularly given what I said about the other sides, as the favourites for the Six Nations title, admittedly Wales and Ireland at home, and we've got to go in there and feel like we can win every single game.
Absolutely. Let's go for the Grand Slam.
At one end of the spectrum, we've got people thinking that England should or could win a Grand Slam. And at the other joyful end, we have something. We're going to return to something that we know and love in this constituency. Jones Moans, Steve, over to you. We love it when you get going. And Jones Moans coming in at number three, Cardiff.
Cardiff Rugby Club, arguably one of the most famous clubs in the world, were so poor on Saturday night. It was shocking, and they almost had their full team out. That was awful, and it was chilling.
And number two is language and the referee's lack of the French language.
Yeah, since you retired, Lawrence, a lot of referees are now having their own say about things. On Saturday, the referee from France in the Saracens-Ospreys game spoke fluent English. He communicated brilliantly with both sides. We had a great game. On Sunday, the La Rochelle game at Sale, the referee had no French whatsoever. All he was doing was shouting louder at the La Rochelle team. I am not for a moment condoning La Rochelle's poor behaviour, but the ref had no sympathy with them and no communication. If you're going to do top games involving French or Italian teams, you should have a working knowledge of the other language, otherwise it's grossly unfair.
And coming in at number one, the nil-all draw.
Nil-nil draw last weekend in the Midlands in a big club game finished nil-nil. The pop papers, the rag end of the market, the red tops, and other people savaged this game, saying, what's rugby come to? The crowd should get their money back. What a shocker. How do they know it was a shocker? I've heard it from the referee himself. It was a great game. There were no points. It ended in a draw, which was a good result. But it was a terrific, full-blooded game with great discipline and could easily have been 56-55.
So we want more nil-all draws then?
No, but what I hate is the whinging about a nil-nil draw. Yeah, we do want more nil-nil
draws. Yeah, let's have more. And so who was playing that nil-all draw? All right, scrap that a bit.
Also, one of our regular features is for us to select a god or goddess of the week. Slotty, across everything that happened in the world of rugby, who are you going for?
My God of the Week is a man that no one sees, no one hears. He's a mystery figure in rugby. His name is Andrew Rogers. He's the salary cap manager at Premier Rugby. You search him on the internet, you can't find him. He's just out there. He's sniffing out criminal irregularities in the world of rugby. And I tell you what, he really needed the thickest skin and a suit of armour to get through the legal proceedings to get his Saracens penalty over the line. Sorry, Jonesy, I know I didn't mean to dig up an old one, but that was always going to be my God of the Week. Andrew Mystery Man Rogers.
Jonesy?
My God of the Week clearly is Nigel Ray. the man who in the worst area of London created Saracens High School, which now has a 98% attendance record for staff and children, way above the national average. The government has now approached him saying, would you please create a Saracens primary school as well, which is what they're doing. And that is absolutely wonderful.
God, just imagine what he's going to pay the teachers. Goodness sake.
We'll certainly get the best teachers there, that's for sure. My God of the Week is Finn Russell for playing rugby the way that the gods probably designed the game to be played. And let's hope that carries on for both Racing, for Scotland, and in 2 years' time for the British and Irish Lions.
Very good. Well done, Finn. Well done, Lawrence. Well done for getting back from Tokyo. Didn't think we were ever going to see you again.
My thanks to Owen Slott and to Stephen Jones. The Ruck will return next Monday. Make sure you never miss an episode. Subscribe now via Acast, iTunes, or your preferred podcast provider.
Sorry.